Blog Talk Radio.
Time I play that song, that means it's time for one thing and one thing only. We're talking about the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. Good evening, everybody, and welcome back to the 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show as we review the first round draw for this edition's tournament in 2019. The U.S. Open Cup is back. And, of course, the first-round matches will be played on Tuesday night, Tuesday, May 7th, as well as Wednesday, May 8th. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be a lot of fun. It is something that we all love to talk about. It's all near and dear to our hearts. When we get ready for this tournament, over 100 years old, over 100 years old, the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup, as we get ready to have some fun to discuss what it will be when these sides are going to face each other in this tournament. We have ourselves some fantastic, fantastic sides. Once again, in the opening round, we will have 10 USL League Two participants, formerly known as the Premier Development League. We're going to have 14 NPSL sides from the National Premier Soccer League. We're going to have 8 qualified amateur sides. We are also going to have, for the first time in the first round, 6 professional sides beginning in round one, representing the third division, USL League One. This is how exciting we're going to have it. This is how exciting it's going to be, that we are finally going to have professional sides performing in the first round of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup for the 2019 edition. Here are those sides, and we start off with the professionals in USL League One. Chattanooga Red Wolves, Forward Madison FC, Greenville Triumph SC, Lansing Ignite FC, the Richmond Kickers now in the third division, and the South Georgia Tormenta. Representing the amateurs now in USL League Two, Black Rock FC, Brazos Valley Calvary FC. The Dayton Dutch Lions are back in the Open Cup. The Des Moines Menace has returned to the Open Cup. FC Golden State Force, they were pretty solid last year in the 2018 edition. Lakeland, Florida, Lakeland Tropics are in this tournament. The New York Red Bulls under 23 squad is representing now. Reading United, always playing and always qualifying for the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. South Georgia Tormenta's 2 team will take over South Georgia Tormenta's normal pickup when they were in the PDL, because now that they've qualified as a professional side representing the USL League One, their 2 team, which will probably be the under-23s, now has that automatic bid. And the Villages, I have to do that jingle because that, of course, in Florida, the Villages, that is the resort for golfers like Nancy Lopez and many others like Arnold Palmer as well. If you ever see the commercial for Florida's friendliest hometown for the elderly and stuff. That's pretty funny, but it should be a lot of fun to go and talk about the clubs from the National Premier Soccer League, NPSL. AFC Ann Arbor is back. Duluth FC. El Farolito. Erie Commodores FC. FC Baltimore. Runners-up to the NPSL titles, FC Motown. FCM Portland, Oregon. Laredo Heat SC, now performing in the NPSL for the Open Cup. Little Rock, Arkansas's Rangers. Miami FC, the NPSL champions. Midland Odessa Soccers. New York Cosmos B. Orange County FC and the Philadelphia Lone Star FC. And the 8 qualified amateurs representing many amateur leagues across the country. Academica SC, Cal FC, FC Denver, the Florida Soccer Soldiers, the Milwaukee Bavarians. They had the automatic bid as U.S. Adult Soccer Association champions of that tournament. The North Texas Rayados, Virginia United, and West Chester United. These are the sides that are going to be facing each other in the first round of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. This is going to be exciting. 38 sides. Facing each other in round one. It should be exciting to have these little Davids fighting with each other. And then they'll move on to take on the Goliaths of USL Championship League, representing the second division. Then in the third round, those round two winners will face each other in the third round, and the winners will move on to face MLS opponents in the fourth round proper in June. Exciting times coming in, and this is why I'm excited. This is what's in my voice. This is what I believe. Because the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup is probably the most exciting tournament in sports here in the United States. Oh, sure, there's always going to be the playoffs. That's within their own right to be exciting as well. But when do you see a professional side in the minor leagues facing a National Hockey League side or an NBA side or a Major League Baseball side for a secondary competition? You'll never see that in baseball. Never. If you ever see it in baseball, it'd be the most luckiest thing you'll ever see. But it will never happen. The National Hockey League, there's a possibility to have some form of cup competition that begins in the lower levels of minor league hockey, like in the East Coast Hockey League. And then you have the American Hockey League. And then you have those teams facing off against the National Hockey League. But once again, all these teams are affiliated with a National Hockey League team, affiliated with a Major League Baseball team, affiliated with an NBA team. There is no minor league American football unless you're going to have the Canadian Football League, the CFL, taking on the NFL in a border war. That's the only way you're going to see something like that happen. Other than that, this is the way to go, folks. This is the excitement that is in my voice. This is the excitement that we've been building, hoping, and now that the draw has been completed, we are going to go and tell you who is facing whom in all four regions of this Open Cup tournament. The Northeast region, on Tuesday, May the 7th, it will be FC Baltimore against West Chester Predators at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. The Richmond Kickers taking on Virginia United. The New York Cosmos B taking on BlackRock FC. New York Red Bulls under 23 squad taking on FC Motown. The runners up of the MPSL title match on Wednesday, May 8th. Erie Commodores FC against Dayton Dutch Lions. Lansing Ignite taking on AFC Ann Arbor. Reading United taking on the Philadelphia Lone Star Wednesday, May the 8th. In the Southeast region, Lakeland Tropics taking on the Villages. And South Georgia Tormenta 2 against the Chattanooga Red Wolves. Those are in Tuesday, May 7th. On Wednesday, May 8th, Greenville Triumph hosting South Georgia Tormenta. Miami FC taking on the Florida Soccer Soldiers. In the Central region, on Tuesday, May 7th, Bavarian SC will be taking on Forward Wisconsin. Wednesday, May 8th, Little Rock Rangers versus North Texas Riados. Des Moines Menace hosting Duluth FC. Midland Odessa Soccers taking on FC Denver. Laredo Heat taking on the Brazos Valley Cavalry. And that's on Wednesday, May 8th. The West Region. And these matches will be all played on Tuesday night. Academica SC taking on El Farolito. Cal FC taking on FC Mulhouse Portland. And finally, Orange County FC taking on football club Golden State Force. These are the matches. Tuesday, May the 7th. And Wednesday, May the 8th. Every single match will be broadcasted on ESPN Plus. You don't have to check your local listings. You don't have to check your satellite or your cable provider. Just have yourself a subscription for ESPN Plus, and you'll be able to watch either live or later on replay every single match online on your computer, your tablets, laptops, and smartphones, any web-enabled devices to watch these matches from the first round all the way through to the final, which will probably be on ESPN anyway, but it will also be on ESPN Plus. I'm telling you, everyone, this is an exciting time. This is an exciting night to, of course, see who is going to be drawn with whom. The only thing, you know, that I loved from the last couple of years was when the Open Cup app was on Twitter, that they were able to announce that way who were the matchups. But you know what, folks? It doesn't matter now. It's already out there. It's already been decided, drawn. It's going to be exciting to watch. And, of course, we're going to get into this whole thing on tonight's show. Join me right now all the way down from South Florida, my good friend Carter Krishnar. Of course, you know him from World Soccer Talk. But he also helps out the Miami FC club, through the NPSL playoffs, winning the NPSL championship over at Drew University in Madison, New Jersey. They defeated FC Motown by a final of 3-1, but they automatically qualified for the Open Cup. Kardec, welcome back. And it's, you know, you've been around South Florida a lot with, you know, then the Fort Lauderdale Strikers, Boca Raton FC, and now with Miami United as well back in the year last year. But, you know, Miami FC, it's an exciting time. They're back in the cup race here, and they're going to start it off in the first round. We'll get to that opponent in a minute. But how exciting is it to get back into the Open Cup, Kardec?
Yeah, it's very exciting. I mean, the Open Cup is the premier competition for lower division clubs. And Miami FC got to the quarterfinals in 2017. Remember the epic victory over Atlanta United at Ricardo Silva Stadium, and obviously a great game against FC Cincinnati. Fell short in the quarterfinal, and the year before that, Fort Lauderdale Strikers, same league, NASL, same area, South Florida, making a run to the quarterfinals, winning at Orlando, which Miami FC had done also in 2017. So it's a tournament that has a lot of significance for those of us in South Florida. I want to remind people that the Miami Fusion got to the final in 2000. Francis Okorafor own goal cost us that day. But rich history here with the tournament. As I said, both Fort Lauderdale and Fort Lauderdale Strikers and Miami FC have been in the quarterfinals the last few years. So, and Miami
Absolutely.
United last year, I forgot to mention, Miami United last year won 3 games in this competition and got 4 rounds deep. And, you know, they had to start in the first round as an NPSL team. So it's either qualified via NPSL league place. Very good run. So we've had some real success among South Florida teams recently here in the Open Cup the last 3 seasons.
Absolutely. It's going to be a lot of fun here. It's going to be exciting. Miami FC, let's talk about the opponents, the Florida Soccer Soldiers. They went through 4 rounds of qualifying. Well, 3 to be honest. Of course, they were supposed to take on American Soccer Club that also represented the state of Florida, but they pulled out. They decided to they withdrew. I don't know what their reasons were for, but for the Florida Soccer Soldiers, they advanced automatically into the round one draw. And what is about Miami FC as they are going to get ready, you know, once their regular NPSL season is over? They'll be back as a professional side in the NPSL Pro League starting around July, August. You know, what is it about Miami FC that, you know, going down from being a professional side to an amateur side, now going back up as a professional side with the new NPSL Pro League?
Yeah, I mean, it's been an era of flux. I mean, with the collapse of the NPSL, I had to find a home. Played in NPSL last season, won the title, as you mentioned. It was not as easy as you might think it would be with a professional team in an amateur league. A lot of good teams, a lot of good players. You mentioned Miami United. Miami FC played them 3 times last year and didn't beat them, including the Open Cup. So had some tough games against Jacksonville, who had been a fellow NPSL opponent. So it was very difficult. Now you've got a situation, and there are a couple teams that are in this boat, Cal FC, Miami FC, Miami United, that are the New York Cosmos, that are transitioning from, and Detroit. Some other teams like Milwaukee Tours and I think Chattanooga might have completely different rosters or slightly different rosters, significantly different. Well, Milwaukee's not even playing in the regular NPSL. And in Chattanooga's case, I think they might turn over a lot of their roster between the amateur season and the formal NPSL season. It's not necessarily amateur. There are professional teams in the NPSL. And the Founders Cup, which begins, as you mentioned, in early August. It is a challenge because what we have, take Miami FC, for example, what we have is a 3-month season in our state against our Sunshine Conference with potentially the national playoffs, as you saw, ended last year, first week of August, Drew University in New Jersey. And you turn around the next week after that, and you're playing in a professional league. So what I think you're going to see from Miami FC this season is a team that is fairly deep, is a professional team having to use the Open Cup potentially to get ready for that NPSL Founders Cup season, which begins in August against other professional sides. And I have to say, I think we knew this was going to be the draw because they're the other South Florida team that is in this competition this year. Miami United did not qualify after their great run last year. Boca Raton FC did not qualify. Some of the other top teams down here, and Palm Beach Spartans, they did not qualify. So Florida Soccer Soldiers did qualify, as you mentioned. They have been a lot of people probably don't know much about them. They have been fantastic in the local UPSL division. We have 2 divisions of UPSL down here between Palm Beach County and Dade and Broward, between the 3 counties down here. We have 22 UPSL teams. For me, they're right now the best team of those 22 teams. And that's saying a lot because there are a lot of good teams. Like I mentioned Boca. I mentioned Palm Beach Spartans. I think Hurricane FC. I think you've seen at times Red Force has been really good too.
Yes, they have.
Thus far, they're generally very good. And they've made the Open Cup, right? Miami FC played them last year. Florida Soccer Soldiers right now, for me, are the best team in that league. And they have been they won the fall championship. They have been for about, I would say, 9 months, the best team in that league. So very tough game. I think the one thing we've learned about these Open Cup runs, and I think this is something Eric Winalda could tell you from when he took Cal FC pretty deep in the tournament. Cal FC now managed by Steve Costigan for Fox Sports, who we heard on the call of the Bundesliga this weekend. I think what you find is amateur teams don't necessarily have the fitness level to compete with professional teams. We saw that last year in the Red Force Miami FC game. I thought Red Force was very good for much of that game, but they just didn't have the fitness levels and they dropped off. You saw it a little bit for Miami United, who were very good, I thought, against Orlando City for much of that game. But, you know, eventually your fitness levels your lack of fitness kicks in. That's something that Miami FC has going for it with professional players, with a professional setup, and the ability to kind of just grind through these sorts of matches against amateur teams. And we see that at the MPSL level also. But really exciting tournament. You know, you've got some really good teams in the state. Lakeland Tropics, they've qualified. The Villages SC, they've qualified. They're going to play each other. The Tampa Bay Rowdies are off to their best start in their history, in the history of this Rowdies. I know they like to link the two clubs' histories, but they're not really the same club. So in the 10 years of this Tampa Bay Rowdies, this is the best start they've gotten off to. I think they are playing well. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out, because the two teams in this state that were really good in Open Cup last year were Miami United and Jacksonville, and neither has qualified this time. Now, like I said, previous years, Miami FC, Fort Lauderdale Strikers, who are now out of business, et cetera, has played very well. So there's always a story coming out of Florida, and I keep an eye on the four teams I mentioned. I mean, I think the Lakeland Villages game has got to be a game you circle around the country if there's a game you want to watch, just to see like a very even matchup between two teams that could win a couple games. They might get the Rowdies in the next round, which would be a tough game, obviously. But a team that might win a couple games would be the winner of that match, Villages and Lakeland.
Yeah, I mean, I think Lakeland Tropics, to me, I mean, that's that could be like one of those dark horses that you don't know much about them, but they'll definitely give you a game, and you got to make sure that you're going to be able to go out there and you're going to handle your business against a team like that. And just like as you said, Florida Soccer Soldiers, not many around outside the state knows them like how you know them, because it's an amateur side, and you know they could give problems right off the bat if they get an opportunity. You know, I mean, let's be honest here, Kardik. Miami FC shows a hint of weakness mentally. Florida Soccer Soldiers, if they get a goal ahead of them, they could smell blood in the water and they could probably take advantage of it. And, of course, no one knows more about that than Christos FC out of Maryland, how they were able to just run rampant all over the Northeast. And who can ever forget them actually taking a lead against DC United in the first half, probably the first 10-15 minutes of the matchup, that free kick goal by Mamadou Kanse, and of course that sent the internet, you know, up in flames, because we were expecting, the truth is I was expecting Upset City. They let an equalizer in, they held their own through 75 minutes, and then the dam finally broke, and of course DC United, they train every single day, and of course, the teams like Christos FC, you pray to God that whoever can get off of work early can come in and train.
Yeah, no, that's the nature of a lot of these clubs that you're going to see in the first and second rounds of this competition. And I think that that's part of the appeal. I also have to say that there has been a proliferation of USL teams and now USL League One teams. NISA is not participating in this competition. I'm not quite sure what NISA is going to do on the player side, because it seems like, I mean, a lot of these guys who are playing on these amateur teams in the Open Cup, I think, might end up on NISA's side in the fall when they kick off. But what you're seeing is that there's a dispersion of talent, okay? Because there's been such rapid expansion at the USL level. And I mean, even at the MLS level. I mean, I was just going through with a Miami FC employee today. The roster from the Houston Dynamo in 2006 and 2007, and I was thinking, my gosh, you know, you can't assemble a team that's actually that good in MLS at this point. Atlanta fans, Toronto fans, you can come after me for that, but you really can't. Outside, you know, that was pre-DPs. Now you get two or three DPs that elevate the entire team, but in terms of just like the overall depth, the first 15 guys on that Houston team that Don Kinnear had at the time, you can't assemble that anymore because we've had such expansion. So the thing I would say, Daniel, I am getting to a point here, sorry, in a roundabout way.
That's okay.
Is that because the talent is so dispersed among USL teams, and there are players we know that fall through the cracks, and I'm going to say that Florida Soccer Soldiers have a couple of those guys that have fallen through the cracks. I think there is a distinct possibility you could see an amateur team make a run this season. I think this is I'm not predicting it because it's very difficult, but this would be the year you could see. Well, Christo's made it last year, right? But you could see another run like that. And I think as you see this rapid expansion of teams at the Division II and Division III level, in theory that means all the players, good players, are taken up. But no, what it actually means is that there are still the same types of players falling through the cracks to amateur side. And instead, what you have going on is you've got none of those teams at the USL level will be as strong as Louisville was 2 years ago, or Cincinnati was 2 years ago, or Miami FC was 2 years ago, or Fort Lauderdale was 3 years ago. Harrisburg was when they made their Open Cup runs, and Charleston. None of the USL teams are going to be as strong as those teams were. I know that the people at the league level and fans will be very angry when I say that, but it's true because the talent has been dispersed. So it'll be that much easier now if you're an amateur team to beat one of those USL teams, I believe, than it was for whoever drew Charleston and had to play Charleston, who was always good in Open Cup, or Harrisburg City Islanders, who were always strong in Open Cup. Or as I mentioned more recently, Fort Lauderdale, Miami, and Louisville and Cincinnati have been good in Open Cup. And the Carolina Railhawks for years were very good in Open Cup. You have a better chance of beating the current equivalent of the Carolina Railhawks, which is North Carolina FC, the same team, than you would have in 2013 if you're an amateur team. And I firmly believe that because I just think the professional talent has been dispersed and diffused beyond a recognizable level because of all the expansion.
Very true. You know, Kartik, so many times we talk about the Open Cup on the production level, the broadcast level, the promotion level of these games, and now we're seeing another evolution of the U.S. Open Cup. You pray to God to get more than just the final on television. You pray to God that you can get more games going forward. There's been a spattering of here and there on TV. I remember a couple of years ago when the New York Cosmos came to Red Bull Arena to take on the New York Red Bulls in a fifth round game. Madison Square Garden Network broadcasted, as well as the Cosmos Television Network, which was One World Sports, I believe. And that was the first time that not only were these two sides facing each other on regular television being broadcasted, but actually the ratings were very good. It got great ratings locally in the New York City area, and hopefully maybe we'll get something like that again one day. But you know what? ESPN stepping up once again, using their ESPN Plus platform, and every single match will be broadcasted on ESPN Plus from the first round all the way to the end. That is a major game changer to this tournament that has been lacking the respect from the soccer community at times, and not from people who are loving the Open Cup, talking about those people in the industry, in the television production business. who has not really shown respect until now.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that there's a lot to be said for the competition now having more eyeballs and being elevated in terms of prestige and exposure. My concern about the television deal, as I've expressed, is that it might pass undue burdens onto lower division teams. I've been assured in the last 4 days or so since the deal was announced that that's not the case. The same production company, based out of Fort Lauderdale, actually, out of my area, here in South Florida, that does USL and NWSL's production work, is working with U.S. Soccer on this project. So that gives me some assurance. I am still concerned about the cost, because I have to tell you, for lower division teams, this thing is very cost prohibitive. That's why you see teams drop out in qualifying. That's why you see Chattanooga FC not playing in the Open Cup this year, getting ready for their professional season in August. But yeah, it's a big step forward. I'm hoping the production's good, and it'll be great to be able to, on the night of the first round, and the night you've done the whip around in the past, Daniel, to be able to turn on, again, I'm Florida-centric in many ways. I try and be cover the whole national picture, but I am a Floridian. Turn on that Villages versus Lakeland Tropics match and get a real feel for two very high-level lower division teams. I wouldn't even classify them as amateur teams. They're really not. And I'm not sure who Lakeland's going to play in terms of players in this Open Cup, because they qualified with one set of players, and they've got another set of players now, or some of the same players, but they have another bunch of players that they've brought in recently. Really good team. But, you know, whoever they're playing, they're going to be good. And the Villages, I know it's good. And the Villages we've seen previously in the Open Cup do very well. They had an unfortunate issue, right, in a previous Open Cup where they had to forfeit a game. There was a player who had played for Boca Raton FC, a club I'm very familiar with in qualifying, and helped Boca Raton FC qualify for the Open Cup that year, who then signed with the Villages. I don't think the Villages were aware that he was cup-tied. But the way that this tournament's administered is on the teams to check eligibility. So this is another thing. As we get more television exposure, we get more professionalism around the look of the tournament, I would love for U.S. Soccer to take more of have more hands on deck to where they could say, hey, Villages FC, you can't play this guy against Charleston, because if you play him against Charleston, he's ineligible and he'll have to forfeit the game. What ended up happening is the Villages beat Charleston and then had to forfeit the game because they didn't know the guy was ineligible. Blaming U.S. Soccer for it, because I understand the resources given to this tournament. The people who run this tournament, Paul Moss Settler and others, do a wonderful job. There's just not the kind of resources allocated to the Open Cup that there should be, or that there could be. I'm now hoping, since we see the seriousness of a television deal, there will be. And in the future, if the Villages have a guy that played for Boca Raton in qualifying, and Boca Raton qualified that year, right, so he was ineligible, they turn around and say, hey, Villages, you can't play this guy against Charleston or Greenville or whoever they're playing, because you might have to forfeit the game. So as the tournament gets bigger and gets more exposure, I'd like to see that happen as well. And U.S. Soccer takes the lead on that.
And let's not forget what happened last year, Cardick, between the Portland Timbers and Los Angeles FC in the quarterfinals, because apparently Mark Anthony Kay, Canadian, you know, he played, but, you know, he didn't have a green card to be involved in to be eligible for the Open Cup. And I understand that, you know, Bob Bradley's staff contacted U.S. Soccer and asked them, is he eligible? And they said yes. And then Portland said, well, you know, he's not eligible because he doesn't count, because of the green card does not count for the Open Cup game. And at the time, I said, this is what I said, Cardick, and I felt this is what should have happened, because LAFC did due diligence to inquire about Mark Anthony Kay. They got improper information from U.S. Soccer.
Yeah.
And U.S. Soccer gave them improper information. And Portland, they lost, but I felt it was up to U.S. Soccer to actually give a replay to both sides to make it more fair. I understood there was some sort of swear word or a racist word that was being thrown in during the game and by someone from Portland. I don't know who it was, and I'm not going to make any – I'm not going to bring that whole thing back up. But I was very disappointed in U.S. Soccer not offering a replay for this matchup because, it was their snafu, and I felt that the most fair thing to do was to give a replay, and U.S. Soccer basically weaseled themselves out of it by saying to Portland, look, let LAFC advance. They won fair and square. It's our mistake, but let them advance anyway. No, that was wrong. That should have been a replay to be fair to both sides.
Yeah, no, I agree. And then Portland made a bit of a stink about it and then withdrew their complaint. But it was a very bad look for the tournament. We've had a couple of these. I mean, I mentioned the Villages one. I knew about that. I'm not the one who blew the whistle, by the way, but I knew that they had an ineligible player. Now, maybe it's incumbent on people like me who know to blow the whistle, but I didn't want to because I thought it was a great story, and I didn't want to hurt a team. So, but there was the whistle blown on them for fielding an ineligible player. But a number of people, so many of us knew that they had a guy that had played for someone else. But they didn't know, or they weren't aware of the rules. See, and that's my concern, that U.S. Soccer, like the FA in England, should be printing a list, hey, this player is ineligible, this player is ineligible, this player is ineligible. Look, USL does this every week. I assume MLS does too, but USL does a great job of saying, hey, this player is ineligible, this player is ineligible, this player is ineligible, every week and sending reports to the teams internally. So, I'd love to see U.S. Soccer do that. Maybe this means they have to outsource some of the management of the tournament to USL or MLS. I don't know. I would rather that not happen, obviously, when USL and MLS teams are competing. There needs to be more hands on deck to deal with these situations and not have the embarrassing situation we had after the Portland LAFC game last season. And the other thing I'll say about this is that I think it's also important now that the matches are on television or on ESPN Plus, which might as well be television, you have some sort of consistency in kind of presentation and information about the team. So I think it's going to be important, and this is incumbent on the teams also, to get more information out there about themselves in advance of the Open Cup. Some teams, again, amateur, lower division teams, semi-pro teams, they do a better job of this than others. Some teams just kind of turn up and play, and you don't know anything about them. Other teams are really aggressive. Hey, we qualified for the Open Cup. It's a big achievement for our guys. Get to know this player or that player. I realize most people working at the lower division level, extreme lower division level, not in USL, but other leagues are volunteers or kind of part-time employees. But take it upon yourself to get more information out there about your teams. That'll also help the match broadcasters, et cetera, as they cover this tournament.
Absolutely. I have, while you didn't want to blow the whistle on the ineligible player for the Villages, I have a great story for you. It involves the New York Red Bulls. Now, do you remember the Red Bulls' run in 2017 to the final?
Yeah, of course.
So I was at training before the Red Bulls were facing New York City FC in 2017's fourth-round matchup, the first time that the two sides were facing each other in the Open Cup. I was at training before that matchup began, maybe 2 days ago. See, in 2016, in the quarterfinals, Jesse Marsh was sent off after Bradley Wright Phillips got called for a foul that he did not like, and he felt that Bradley did not deserve.
Yeah, I remember that very well.
So basically, Jesse Marsh was at training, getting the guys ready to go, getting everybody, getting them ready for New York City FC for the very first meeting in the Open Cup. And I said to Jesse, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but because you were sent off in the road game at Philadelphia Union in the quarterfinals of the Open Cup, shouldn't that mean that you're suspended for this matchup because you got eliminated by Philadelphia? And that's where Chris Armas took over for that match.
Oh wow!
Because
oh, wow.
let me just say this right now, and I rarely talk about it, but you know what? If not for me asking Jesse Marsh that question, and here's the other thing too. Every year we get the Open Cup handbook, and every year there's a list of players who have not served their one-match suspension because their side got eliminated. You know, whoever has to serve their suspension for the following year has to do it.
Right.
And Jesse Marsh's name was not on that list.
Huh. Now, that's interesting, because that's, again, another administrative oversight from U.S. Soccer. A couple of points here. One, I think that it is U.S. Soccer maybe should get together with USL, MLS, NPSL, and now that NISA, I presume, will be in the tournament in the future, and talk about the possibility of just applying those suspensions to league games so we don't have this confusion. So if Jesse Marsh – he's not managing an MLS anymore, but if Chris Armas gets thrown out of the fourth round match for the Red Bulls this year, he serves a suspension, and they lose, he serves a suspension in the next MLS match. That's the way it
That's
works
correct.
In other parts of the world. And then the second thing is, this is a shameless plug, Daniel, because we're doing this today. I have the latest in the Behind the Shield series that we tape weekly and we release weekly at Miami FC's YouTube page, and you can find it on Twitter and Facebook as well. Latest interview is with Lloyd Sam. We talk a lot about Jesse Marsh's coaching philosophy. So shameless plug, if Lloyd Sam would be rapping a little bit about Jesse Marsh and high pressing and the style of play, the Red Bulls and the 2015 Supporters Shield triumph, and you know how good Bradley Wright Phillips was to play with. Check that out at the Miami FC YouTube page or themiamifc.com or wherever, Miami FC on social media. It actually might be more enjoyable for Red Bull fans than Miami FC fans, but we were talking about Lloyd Sam's career, so that was a fun conversation. And that just came out a couple hours ago, so timely.
Yep. Listen, Lloyd's a great guy. Miami FC is very lucky to have him join them. I've had great moments with Lloyd talking about matches before, after, and other things. He's a real nice guy. So Miami FC is lucky to have a player like Lloyd Sam over there. So there's the little spill of my Open Cup history. And let's not forget the most famous ineligible player story in the Open Cup history. As you may remember, the Chesapeake Dragons, Cardick, and the New Hampshire Phantoms. That is the most famous ineligible player, replay-a-rama that many probably don't remember, or, you know, we bring it back, obviously. They believe it was the Dragons who lost the match and took on New Hampshire Phantoms, and they had to replay that match because I think the Phantoms had an eligible player and the Dragons had to go into the damn thing twice, and I think they got they won the replay but lost the next round.
But they had to play an extra match, and they won. But that was the most famous, most memorable ineligible player story where a replay was granted. Now, here's the thing. Now we've got this situation between some rounds where there's only a week. And when there's only a week, you don't have time for a replay. Some rounds, there's 2-3 weeks. You can have games postponed because of weather. You can have all of these different things that happen during the summer. We have a lot of storm issues in the Southeast in particular, that affect these matches. You can give replays later in the competition. You can postpone matches and play it a week or two later. We've had a few of those, actually, in recent years, later in the competition. But in this first round, there's no margin for error. You play the first round, and then the next week you're playing the second round. So if you field an ineligible player, even by accident, you're out of the competition. Okay, you're not going to get a replay. You're not going to get any sort of grievance compensation. People might feel sorry for you, but you're out. So that's unfortunately the way it goes.
Yep, that's absolutely true. And let's not forget Kardec. You know, for me personally, of course, with Christopher Harris from World Soccer Talk, of course, with the former partnership with Rabble, those Open Cup whip-around shows, due to the fact that now that every single match will be broadcast on ESPN Plus, Kardec, I've already made the announcement. The Open Cup whip-around show is no more. You know, now there's an official licensing agreement with ESPN Plus to broadcast the games, and I am not employed at the moment to do these sort of things. I'm afraid I'm going to have to end those whip-around shows. But let me just say that once again, if you – you know, listen, I got to be fair. You know, we can't have an issue here with U.S. Soccer or ESPN. But, you know, listen, if ESPN ever wants to hire me to do whip-around shows from their studios in Bristol, and we'll stream it. I mean, why not? I don't mind doing it. But, you know, unfortunately, we're going to have to put an end to that.
You did a great thing for this competition for a number of years. I'd call in through the years. I'd listen. I'd check it out. I mean, I'd even be – back in the days when I worked for the NASL, I worked for the Pearl Harbor Strikers, be at an Open Cup match, and then would call into your show and give you an update, or would be listening to your show so I knew what was going on in other matches. It was literally my only way of finding out. You and obviously the good work Josh Hakala has done with his website. But beyond that, you know, it was very difficult to get information about this tournament. The last few years, U.S. Soccer began stepping up their game on the digital side. I know some of the guys that were working at the Federation on that, and they've done a good job. And now they've gotten their superiors and the folks over at Soccer United Marketing finally interested in it as a television or as a broadcast property. So happy about that. It's progress for the tournament. And, you know, we will see what happens. The rest of this year. Now, it's funny, the year that the tournament goes on television is the year that we have the least number of teams from Florida in the tournament for in a long time. We had 10 Florida teams in the tournament just a few years ago. And now we're down to the four that are playing in the first round, what, Tampa Bay and Orlando, that will enter the tournament later. And the year Fort Lauderdale made its run to the quarterfinals, I think we had 10 teams in the state of Florida in the tournament that year. That would have been 2016. So we've gone from 10 to 6. But the tournament itself has gotten bigger and better in that period. So I can't be completely parochial and say, oh, there are a lot of Florida teams, so tournament's not as good. That's not the case at all.
No, not the case at all. And, you know, once again, a bunch of USL clubs that are not affiliated with MLS clubs, like, of course, Real Monarchs, Red Bulls 2, Sounders, well, actually now Tacoma Defiance, it's still Seattle Sounders USL affiliate, Timbers 2, Los Dos, you know, Swope Park Rangers, those clubs will not be allowed to join in. They are professional sides at the same time. But to still see the Charleston Battery being involved in this, and next year hopefully Rochester comes back with USL League One, Penn FC comes back with USL League One in 2020, we'll have those teams back. Of course, Penn FC, formerly the Harrisburg City Islanders, will hopefully have those guys ready to go and, you know, get back into the Open Cup. It's going to be a lot of fun. And hopefully Chattanooga FC comes back. I understood why they wanted to take time off to be ready to go in their professional league with the MPSL Pro League. But still, though, I personally feel that missing them is a big subtraction to the Open Cup. They've always been hard-nosed Open Cup upsetters all over the place. So all I can say is I really do hope that Chattanooga FC will make a comeback for next year if possible.
Yeah, I mean, I think and I hate to rain on everybody's parade about the tournament. And we want the tournament to have a lot of success this year, obviously. But I think, and I can't speak for Tim Kelly or anyone, or Sheldon Gritzel or anyone in that organization, but I think they have done so much for the sport and for lower division soccer in this country. So when they make a decision like this, I take it very seriously and I support them. And I have to say, I know what it costs lower division teams to compete in this tournament when you're on tight budgets and how difficult it can be. And I think Chattanooga's decision, again, I can't speak for Tim Kelly or Sheldon Grizzle or anyone in that organization. Some of the best people in the soccer world in this country work or involved with Chattanooga FC. I understand why this decision was made, and I can completely relate to it. And it's something that U.S. soccer, again, has to address. Travel costs, costs of hosting games and securing rented facilities for midweek games where you're not going to sell many tickets. Can you do something with now the television contract and your large surplus, $150 million, to help these teams offset these costs they incur? And it's a drop in the bucket of that $150 million. Can you give a stipend to a team like Lakeland? We mentioned Lakeland earlier in the show. They had to go to Midland, Texas last year in the first round. That cost a lot of money. And, yes, they get the money back eventually. But, you have to give them that money up front so that they can – because it's literally that's going to hurt some of their operations for future matches, for future games. And then the other thing would be prize money for lower division teams. As I said, I think everybody knows, I worked with the Fort Lauderdale Strikers off and on the entire existence of that team. 1 year, we got the furthest of any non-MLS team in the Open Cup, and we were waiting on our prize money for 6 months. So they just got to do a better job with stuff, and I think then you won't see teams like Chattanooga opting out. You'll see you won't see teams withdrawing in the final round of qualifying, as we had here in Florida this year. You will see everybody trying to compete in this tournament and some sort of tangible reward at the end. So it's a process. We have to get there. U.S. soccer has to help us get there.
Yeah, I agree. They have to now really, if they're going to be involved in all this whole situation, they must really start to show more help, give more help financially than in the past. Because if not, then this whole thing is going to be really, really a tough stretch for these lower level teams, these amateur level teams who want to be in the dance. They want to be a part of this. They want to go and face an MLS side, a USL side, a professional side. They want their piece of the pie, and why not? They have to. They must. Because, if you're just going to give these teams – there's their one shot at making a big run in this tournament and become famous, like what FC Cincinnati did before being eliminated in the semifinals in 2017 by the New York Red Bulls. If they would have made the final, they would have been probably the biggest threat to Sporting Kansas City in the Open Cup, in the final over at Children's Mercy Park. That's for sure. And other things. So, and what Miami FC did, what Christos did, what Miami United did last year. On and on and on. These teams need their opportunity. Oh, they need their moment in the sun as much as possible.
I agree, but in the interest of full disclosure, I will admit this on this show, and it'll be the only time I admit it, and maybe people think I'm a fraud and a hypocrite for this. I will admit when the Red Bulls, went to extra time and they beat Cincinnati – did it go to extra time? I'm thinking it did, right?
It did. It went to extra time.
Yeah. That I was relieved because I had heard so much about Cincinnati and all these soccer hipsters were into Cincinnati and this is going to, upset the order in U.S. soccer. I was like, I don't have to hear that stuff anymore. Thank you, Jesse, and thank you, New York Red Bulls. But of course, looking back, now I'm kind of wishing, maybe that's the shock the system needed. Maybe Cincinnati did need to win that tournament. But that very night, and I went in that whole week rooting for Cincinnati. That night, when the Red Bulls won, I was relieved, and I shouldn't have been that way. But I was kind of conflicted, I guess, that night about Cincinnati because it was hearing so much about – it was like the whole world was rooting for them. What they did was truly remarkable that year. And we've had teams like Miami FC, who they played the previous round, like Fort Lauderdale the year before, who I worked with, like Harrisburg City, like Charleston consistently, like the Carolina Railhawks, the two straight years they eliminated the Los Angeles Galaxy. when you had these sorts of stories, Atlanta made a deep run, the Silverbacks in the Open Cup 1 year. And I remember actually Seattle when they were still in USL getting to the semifinals, right? 1 year.
Yep.
So you have these stories, Charleston generally being the best Open Cup team outside of MLS, but the costs were pretty tremendous. So I think that's a big part of it. But you know, Daniel, again, thank you for everything you've done for this competition and for soccer in this country over the last decade, but in particular with the Whip Around shows the last few years. And I think you've left it in a really good place for ESPN to take over the rights and give this tournament the exposure it deserves, of these teams and these stories the exposure it deserves.
Absolutely, and thank you very much, Kardec. Of course, the best highlight I could ever give was Atlanta Silverbacks when they were in the NASL, and that extra time bomb from the Silverbacks surprising Chattanooga FC. And I know that was the highlight. That was the highlight of the Rabble's highlight show. And, you know, that, my friend, was also great to hear everyone hearing it. And, you know, it's just grateful for that opportunity. Sadly, Rabble is not what it is, how it should be now. They went away from their game plan, which I thought was a lot better but than what they are right now. I don't know if they're still going on, but one thing is for sure is that doing those Open Cup whip-around shows was a lot of fun, and I would do it again if ESPN would like to give me a shot. If they want to give me that opportunity, I'll make the trip to Bristol. I wouldn't mind it. But other than that, things are good. But, Kardec, all I can say is for Miami FC on Wednesday, May 8th at 7 p.m. Eastern time, over at the Buccaneer Field in Miami Shores, Florida at Barry University. Good luck against Florida Soccer Soldiers. This should be an exciting time. And let's see what happens if they can beat the Florida Soccer Soldiers and advance to round two. Thank you again, Kardec, as always, for coming on the show. And I'll talk to you again soon, my friend. Take care.
Thank you, Daniel.
No problem at all. My good friend, Kardec Krishnayer, World Soccer Talk, and, of course, a member of the Miami FC communications team. You know, Kardec does a great job for this game as well. Of course, listen to the World Soccer Talk podcast with him and the gaffer, Christopher Harris. This is going to be a lot of fun. So once again, let's go through the scheduling. Per region from the Northeast, it will be on Tuesday, May 7th, FC Baltimore versus West Chester Predators, the Homewood Field at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, Maryland. Richmond Kickers will be taking on Virginia United at their City Stadium in downtown Richmond, Virginia. New York Cosmos B will be taking on BlackRock FC. That's at the Rocco B. Camiso Soccer Stadium in Columbia University on the northern end of Manhattan, just before the Harlem River pouring into the Spuytendyvil Creek, before you get to the Bronx on Broadway at the Columbia University Athletic Complex. Red Bulls under 23s hosting FC Motown at their training facility in East Hanover, New Jersey. Erie Commodores will be taking on Dayton Dutch Lions. Lansing Ignite against AFC Ann Arbor, and Reading United against Philadelphia Lone Star. Erie Commodores match, Lansing Ignite, Reading United, May 8th. May 7th in the Southeast region, Lakeland Tropics hosting the Villages. South Georgia Tormenta 2 hosting Chattanooga Red Wolves. May 8th, Greenville Triumph versus South Georgia Tormenta regular, and Miami FC hosting Florida Soccer Soldiers. Central region on Tuesday, May 7th, Bavarian SC against Forward Madison FC. Wednesday, May 8th, Little Rock Rangers versus North Texas Rayados. Des Moines Menace versus Duluth FC. Midland Odessa Soccers versus FC Denver. Laredo Heat versus Brazos Valley Cavalry. And finally, the West, all matches on Tuesday night. Academica SC versus El Farolito, Cal FC versus FC Mulhouse Portland, and of course Orange County FC hosting FC Golden State Force. I want to thank my good friend Kardec Krishnayer for being on the show tonight to talk about Miami FC and the history of this Open Cup tournament going forward. Join me the next time on the Open Cup when we'll review round one proper. My name's Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for listening to me tonight. And as always, please enjoy your football. Join me this Friday night, CONCACAF Champions League semifinal second leg review show. Talk to you then. So long, farewell, and bye-bye for now.